It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Ever tried elk stroganoff? Well, it's one of the new offerings at Lambeau Field concession stands. We'll hear about all the new foods this year at the Frozen Tundra.
Right now, it's our weekly look at the latest news in national politics. There's still fallout from last week's debt ceiling deal between President Trump and Democrats in Congress. Tax reform is on the agenda, and a growing list of Senate Democrats are signing on to a single-payer health care bill.
And Florida is recovering from Hurricane Irma with help from FEMA and faith organizations. And questions continue to be raised about President Trump's business holdings and whether customers at Trump resorts are hoping to buy some influence.
Paul Singer is a Washington correspondent for USA Today. Paul, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Rob. How are you?
Well, good. Let's start with this debt ceiling deal. About a week ago today, President Trump, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, and House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi came up with this debt ceiling slash hurricane relief plan. What have we been hearing from, in particular, Republicans since that happened?
Yeah, this is funny because we had spent much of the last week of August preparing for this onslaught of September, where Congress had all of these things they had to do by the end of the month. They had to get hurricane funding done. They had to get spending bills done to keep the government open. They had to raise the debt ceiling. And we had assigned all these reporters and had this whole strategy. And then, like on a Thursday afternoon, they just did it. kicked the entire thing to December. Republicans were caught completely off guard by this, and to some degree, they were enraged. I mean, when the idea of this package was first floated early in the day, whatever day it was, I've lost track of my days, House Speaker Paul Ryan said it's ridiculous. And 2 hours later, Donald Trump was basically announcing the deal from the White House. So he caught a lot of Republicans blindsided, and their frustration here is that the spending bill and the debt ceiling are supposed to be, for them, opportunities to negotiate with some leverage for significant spending cuts. Well, Trump didn't do any of that with this deal. There were no spending cuts in it. And now we kick it back to December, when it's almost impossible for the Republicans to actually threaten a government shutdown. And so they'll have no leverage at all to demand spending cuts. They are very upset.
And then the other big Republican item after health care didn't end up happening was a tax system overhaul. And now last night and today, President Trump meeting with selected Democrats on taxes, Democrats and Republicans today. I think here's a quick listen to the president kicking off today's meeting.
More and more we're trying to work things out together. That's a positive thing, and it's good for the Republicans and good for the Democrats, and this group knows that very well. Whether we can do the incredible things that we're doing and working in a bipartisan fashion obviously would be a positive, and I think something, Tom, that we all feel good about.
Now, going back to the primary, I remember Ted Cruz and others raising the red flag that President Trump was going to cut deals with Democrats if he was elected. Are they? Is there any kind of I told you so's going on behind the scenes?
Oh, yeah. You know, there has been a longstanding concern amongst conservatives, longstanding conservatives in Washington, that Donald Trump is not one of them. He is a populist and a nationalist, but he is not an ideological conservative. I will tell you that half an hour before I came on your show, we just moved a breaking news alert that Trump announced after his meeting with these Democrats that they have on the table the possibility of raising taxes on the rich.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, that was not on the Republican agenda.
It's apostasy to the Republicans. I mean, that's the stuff we don't do, right? I mean, these people have all pledged no new taxes, right? There's literally the tax cut pledge of Grover Norquist's group that says, with the National Taxpayers Union, that we will not raise taxes. Well, Donald Trump just said, maybe we will.
Are Democrats getting really excited here, or are they thinking, okay, today the president's working with us on the debt ceiling, maybe he's working on taxes? Is this all kumbaya and hugs and kisses here?
No, I mean, the trouble that President Trump has set for himself here is that no one knows what tomorrow's version of Donald Trump's going to look like. And so while I think that there is some enthusiasm amongst the Democrats for the deal that they got on the debt ceiling and the spending bill, and they have some enthusiasm that he's now talking about a tax package they might like, he's interested in some infrastructure stuff they might like, he might even be willing to open to a deal on health care. It's hard to tell. You just don't know what's going to happen tomorrow when he talks to somebody else. And until it's actually signed, sealed, delivered, and passed by the Congress, I don't think anybody is celebrating a victory yet.
We're looking at the latest in national politics with Paul Singer from USA Today. And, Paul, some health care news. Senator Bernie Sanders unveiled a single-payer health care proposal. He's got 15 Democrats signing on, which they didn't used to do. I want to listen to some dueling Sanderses here. First of all, Bernie Sanders speaking today.
We begin the long and difficult struggle to end the international disgrace of the United States, our great nation, being the only major country on earth not to guarantee health care to all of our people.
Then White House spokesperson Sarah Huckabee Sanders, no relation, I believe, responding to Senator Bernie Sanders.
Not only does the president not support it, but America doesn't support it, or Bernie Sanders would be sitting in the Oval Office right now. He pushed these ideas forward during the campaign. They were rejected, not just by America, but Democrats. He didn't make it through the primary. He didn't make it into the Oval. I think that's a pretty clear indication of what America wants to see, and it's not a single-payer system.
So a bunch of Democrats signing on, Paul, where they hadn't been so ready to do so in the past. What do you make of that?
Politics, politics, politics. Sarah Sanders is right. This is not a broadly supported bill, and by the way, the U.S. Congress is almost certainly not going to pass it. However, it is also true that the Democrats have figured out that they don't, it's not clear to Americans what they stand for. It's not clear what their agenda is. And so a bunch of Democrats, particularly ones who might want to run for president in 2020, are now trying to get their arms around Bernie Sanders and his agenda in a big bear hug. So that's where you see people like, you know, Kirsten Gillibrand embracing this, the senator from New York. That's where you see Cory Booker, the senator from New Jersey, embracing this. This is a proposal that Hillary Clinton was not ready to embrace. And in fact, Nancy Pelosi has said that she wants to focus on fixing the Affordable Care Act first. But this is red meat for the Democratic primary voter, or at least the one that Bernie Sanders seemed to really inspire last time. So Democrats want to be there.
I want to look at another potential piece of legislation. This one may be bipartisan. Transgender military bill. We had you just mentioned Senator Kirsten Gillibrand from New York on the Democratic side. On the Republican side, Senator Susan Collins trying to put in an amendment in a defense authorization bill that would effectively block the White House from banning transgender service members from serving. Is that something that you think the Senate would have an appetite to do?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I doubt it. In part because President Trump's policy at the moment is in such murky status. Basically, the president issued this policy in a tweet. I'm sure your listeners remember this a couple of weeks ago, saying that nobody transgender should serve in the military, but he hadn't talked to the Pentagon about it yet. And so what they did was basically create a task force to sort of go sort this all out. And what the Pentagon has said is, we're going to leave our current policy in place. No new transgender soldiers will be enrolled until we figure this out. But for the time being, anybody currently serving can continue to serve until we figure it out. So, you know, I am, there is still a very strong Republican base that is very upset about the sort of decline of traditional American values, particularly faith-based values, and they're going to continue to fight against the expanded opportunities for transgender soldiers. So I don't think yet that the Republican Congress is going to be willing to roll that back, but it makes for an interesting argument.
We're looking at the top stories in national politics with Paul Singer from USA Today. Still to come, faith, FEMA, and hurricane recovery.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see more cooperation between President Trump and congressional Democrats on issues like a tax system overhaul? A lot of Democratic senators are signing onto a single-payer health care proposal. Do you think that's a good idea? You can call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Paul Singer is with us from USA Today, and we're looking at some of the big news in national politics.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. We were just talking about single-payer health care, some Democratic senators getting on board where they didn't before. Is that a good idea in terms of policy, in terms of politics? Do you want to see more cooperation between President Trump and congressional Democrats? Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll go to our callers. We've got Jeff with us in Franksville. Jeff, hi.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
What do you think?
Well, I believe in a one-payer system. In fact, I'd like to see all Americans have the same coverage as our elected representatives in Washington. And what I wanted to comment on is to ask your guest if there's any information or to see what he thinks if it were a one-issue election based on single-payer health care, would there be a Republican in the Oval Office right now?
Jeff, thanks for the call. I mean, Obamacare was almost a single issue in 2010. Paul, can we learn lessons from that for what a single-payer election might look like?
I don't know. I mean, the trouble, of course, as your caller, Jeff, would recognize is that Obamacare was extraordinarily unpopular public policy, but the Affordable Care Act was not.
And, of course, they were the same thing. Yes.
They were the same thing. So it's hard to know at any given moment whether Americans are sufficiently focused on the policy and how it affects them, or they are just affected by the rhetoric and the advertising. Unfortunately, there's no really such thing as a single-issue election, and whatever that issue is would no longer matter anyway if there was, God forbid, some sort of terrorist attack on our soil, you know. So it's just hard to know. It is very clear that from the repeal effort that the Republicans mounted, that repealing Obamacare has not proven to be nearly as popular as Obamacare was unpopular. So it's, you know, once people actually have a benefit like that, they kind of like it.
Thanks for the call. Go next to Jacob in Eau Claire. Jacob, hi.
Hello.
What do you want to bring up, Jacob?
So I'm a registered nurse, and then just from the healthcare level, insurance, I waste so much of my time, and so many others do in healthcare, dealing with insurance and prior authorization, when I think a single-payer system would allow us to spend a lot more time and energy correctly taking care of the patient. Additionally, I think if there was a single-payer, then people would have more freedom in this country. I've heard dozens of stories of people being held back by their current situation because they have to do this, that, or the other thing just to have health care for their families and themselves.
Jacob, thanks for the call. Senator Bernie Sanders talking today raised some similar issues and also said, as I understand it, look, this might result in higher taxes, but you won't be paying money to insurance companies. You won't spend your time filling out paperwork. Life is going to be easier and more convenient for patients. And Jacob saying for healthcare providers, Paul.
Yeah, well, there was a study out just a couple of days ago that said something like 60% of their time, healthcare providers say they spend 60% of their time on paperwork and forms. I honestly would not swear that would be different under a single-payer system because, again, if it's going to be government-run, government-funded, there will still be an enormous amount of paperwork to manage it, at the advantage being that it would be one set of paperwork instead of different paperwork for every insurer. I think the other thing for single-payer that is an advantage is that obviously it makes it easier for people to get wellness care, that is, preventive care. You just walk in and get it, in theory. One of the issues is you are talking about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars, and it's not clear how you pay for that. So that is sort of where the at least one point of dissension. And the other is going to be, if it's government-run healthcare, will you be able to get the healthcare you want, or will you have to wait, or will you be limited in the choices you have?
take one more caller. Thanks for that, Jacob. But one more caller on single payer. Russ is with us in Bristol. Russ, hi.
How are you?
Good. What do you think?
It's a no-brainer. The politicians keep monkeying around with the whole, how do we pay for it? How do we not pay for it? You have to go single payer. They're all about risk pools. The Affordable Health Care Act was about risk pools. Well, they're talking about risk pools of 10, 100 people. You've got 340 million people that live here in America. If you go single payer, you've got a 340 million pool. There's no risk. Therefore, your cost actually goes down.
Gotcha. Russ, thanks a lot for the call. I want to move on to another caller now on taxes, I think. Linda is with us in Chambers Island. Linda, hi.
Hi. Well, I never heard anything in the campaign about lowering taxes for the rich people, and all of a sudden, that's all we heard about. Now we're hearing about raising taxes for rich people. Aren't we all for that? You know, they have so much money, they don't know what to do with it.
Linda, thanks for the call. Paul, what did we hear on tax policy in the campaign?
Well, President Trump's tax policies have been vague but pretty consistent that he wants to reduce the number of tax brackets and lower the highest tax brackets by significant percentages. And again, this is one of those questions of, well, it's going to be a $1 trillion giveaway, particularly to the rich and to corporations. At various times, the president has said, well, yeah, but we're going to pay for it by reducing some of the write-offs, some of the deductions, some of the loopholes by which people avoid taxes. And so it'll be kind of a wash. And at various times, some people amongst his cabinet have suggested that closing those loopholes might actually end up raising the taxes on the rich. But I have to just warn everybody here, we have never at any point in this process seen any real specifics about what is in this tax package, what the president would support and wouldn't support, and what he needs to see. So, you know, until we have numbers on paper, it's really hard for us to know what is really at offering here. But we know the president wants to reduce taxes. He says he wants to make a dramatic tax reduction, particularly on the middle class. And we hear today that maybe that would include an increase in taxes for the wealthy.
Thanks for your call. We're talking to Paul Singer from USA Today, looking at the big stories in national politics. Paul, I want to turn to a couple stories, actually, that you've covered at USA Today. First of all, of course, we've got cleanup going on from Hurricane Irma in Florida, Hurricane Harvey in Texas. And you wrote a piece about the huge role that faith organizations are playing in recovery and generally play in disaster recovery. Tell us about that.
Yeah, what people don't recognize about this, and I frankly didn't know it myself until I really dug into it, is that you know, when FEMA deploys in a disaster area, they deploy along with a whole bunch of nonprofits, large national nonprofits that have major disaster recovery operations. There are truckloads of food being delivered by faith organizations, one called the Convoy of Hope in Missouri, for instance. You know, they will set up a feeding station at FEMA's sort of direction, or at least organize with FEMA. They will staff the feeding operation. The Seventh-day Adventists are experts in warehousing for disaster relief supplies. So when FEMA says, hey, you know, all these disaster relief supplies are arriving from donors and volunteers around the country, where should we put it? The Adventists are where you put it. They know how to set up a big warehouse and run it for FEMA. Someone told me that 80% of disaster recovery will be operated and provided by nonprofit organizations, and 75% of those are faith-based organizations. It's amazing what size of the infrastructure they make up for disaster recovery.
And it was, I had no idea, as you said, you know, the Adventists have their warehouse specialty. A lot of different denominations or religions have their own disaster relief specialty areas.
Yeah, I'm told that the Southern Baptists have the third largest disaster recovery organization in the country. The United Methodists have 20,000 volunteers already in a list, already in a system that can be called up for disaster recovery. And they specialize in various different areas so that they're not stepping on each other's toes. What you don't want, and some of what happened in Katrina, was, you know, you had a feeding tent across the street from another feeding tent by two different organizations. That's no help. So FEMA actually invites these groups into the emergency command headquarters in Washington in the middle of these storms. So while Irma was going on, we were actually over there watching them in their response headquarters, and the faith-based groups were sitting there with the FEMA people organizing the response.
And you've mentioned a few different Christian denominations. Other religions are at the table, too.
Oh, yeah. The Buddhists tell me they're going to give out $5 million worth of gift cards for retail so that disaster victims can go to a retail store and buy things they might need, clothes or food. There's a Jewish cleanup operation that goes and helps people clean out their homes. There's a Muslim disaster relief. It's called something like Islamic National Response Team or something like that. So, it's every faith group. There's also non-faith groups, and there are groups that do this that are non-faith. But it is faith groups of every stripe and in numbers far more significant than we understood.
And finally, Paul, USA Today investigation looked at who's buying memberships at various Trump Organization-owned resorts. Why was that something you tackled?
Well, the White House is no longer releasing visitor records, that is, visitors to the White House. And they're also not releasing the names of visitors to Donald Trump's golf resorts where President Trump spends a lot of time. And we thought it would be worth asking the question, who is he potentially meeting with? Who are some of the folks who are at these resorts, who are members, who can have access to the president? Because you've seen all this stuff on Instagram, and he goes and he hangs out and he chats people on the golf course and he goes to their weddings. So we dug through social media and other public records and found people who had declared their membership in the Trump golf clubs. And it would not surprise you, we found a bunch of rich people. We also found people who were lobbyists, who work for companies that have interests before the president's administration. And these people are now paying $100,000 or $200,000 to be a member of a club that Donald Trump owns so that they can be at the club when Donald Trump shows up. And maybe they can talk to him about what's business. Now, they all tell, the ones we reached told us, we never talk business. It's just about the golf. But we thought it's worth, and we'll continue to pursue, worth seeing whether, in fact, business is being conducted on Donald Trump's golf courses by people who are paying to be there to see Donald Trump.
We'll leave it there for now. Paul, thanks for joining us, as always.
Thanks, Rob. You be well.
You too. That's Paul Singer, Washington correspondent for USA Today, joining us for our weekly roundup of national politics. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, we want to hear what you serve at your Packer parties. You can share your tried and true tailgating recipes with us at 800-642-1234.
First, Packers games are a natural fit with beer and brats, but it turns out the food at Lambeau Field goes way beyond those Wisconsin basics with a new line of concession stand food.
And if you've ever had a craving for elk at a Packers game, well, you're in luck. Daniel Higgins tasted the new food items for the season. He's a food and drink reporter for USA Today Network Wisconsin. Dan, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me back.
So what is new and crazy and interesting at the Lambeau concession stands this year?
Well, I think you mentioned it right off. I think the one thing that probably most people are going to be like, elk, is probably the thing that most people are going to be like out there. I mean, a few years ago, they had that horse collar, and they had some crazier stuff. It doesn't seem like this year that they went quite that far. And even with the elk stroganoff, that is something they've actually had in their 1919 Kitchen and Tap, which is the restaurant inside Lambeau Field there that you can go there anytime. It's open like regular restaurant hours. And that's something that's been on their seasonal menu before. So just being able to get it in the concession stands is probably the newest thing that I'm thinking most people are going to be like, well, that's kind of interesting.
Well, in your piece on this, you talked to the executive chef at Lambeau Field, and that made me realize I didn't know there was an executive chef at Lambeau Field. Can you talk about the kind of challenge of doing that job?
Yeah, I mean, that's really something. Last year, actually, I spent a night following him around, and he actually I was worn out. I couldn't believe how much walking around he's doing around this whole building, solving all these problems as it goes along. In the off season, he leads a team of chefs. You know, they've got a few chefs that are there all the time. Plus, they got the staff at the 1919 Kitchen and Tap there. It's, you know, full-blown culinary arts, really thinking like a chef. And I think, sometimes people don't necessarily think of that. You think, well, they're just, you know, these are just brats and burgers, and that's it. But there's a lot more behind the scenes that goes on, especially if you've ever been fortunate enough to get up in those club levels and see some of the food that they've got around there. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, they got, like, carrot cakes that are stacked three layers deep, and turkey and all kinds of stuff.
Well, you also said it sounds like there are categories of food that get makeovers from season to season, and those include beer and brats and cheese and bacon. Can you tell us what kind of versions of these you saw this year?
This year, they couple of different brat options this year that they brought out. What they did with the bratwurst, one was a basically took like a French dip, you know, like you would dip for, you know, carrots or whatever, and some crushed potato chips, and they have that over top as a topping on a brat. Not too bad. And then they also created this brandy old-fashioned bratwurst, which has like a brandy cherry chutney over the top of it.
How is that? That one struck me as one I'd want to try.
Yeah, for me too. That was one I was like, ooh, that sounds interesting, because I'm kind of used to like looking for the kind of the weird things on the menus when I go out to eat and trying them. It really, the contrast of that tart and the sweet with the bratwurst is really quite interesting. I don't know that it's necessarily something everybody's going to love, but for me, or for people who really like to find something a little bit different, I think that one kind of hits the mark in that regard.
Can you actually get a brandy old fashioned to go along with it in Lambeau?
Last year, when they opened up the Wisconsin Supper Club stand or whatever that was, they were serving brandy old fashions there. I think they've got some premix in there. Again, this year, I haven't been actually in during a game, so I would have to, that's one thing, it's probably a question I should have asked. Where were you?
So I'm not so much for the brats. That one sounded intriguing. What I really care about is the cheese. What kind of offerings do we have for those of us who are cheese worshippers?
The cheese, the kind of the more interesting thing this year was that the bacon wrap pretzel that's stuffed with nacho cheese, basically. It's basically taking three things I think a lot of fans are going to love anyway. If you've ever had soft pretzels and dip them in the nacho cheese, well, that's right in there. And then let's add a little bacon to really kind of kick things up. And that was probably the biggest cheese thing this year that they kind of revamped. They do, you know, with the bacon dilla, which was in essence a quesadilla or quesadilla, I suppose, if you pronounce it the Napoleon Dynamite way. You know, there's some cheese in there with it, but this year it wasn't quite as extensive on the cheese makeovers as in some years.
Talking to Dan Higgins from USA Today Network, Wisconsin, looking at the new line of food at Lambeau Field. Dan, you tasted all this. They have a media tasting day. What is that actually out on the field, or how does that work when you show up to try the new line of food at Lambeau?
This year they actually had it in the Johnsonville tailgate, what they call it, village. I think they call it the tailgate village. I think that's the official name, which is that new structure. I don't know if anybody's been up to Lambeau. If you've been to Lambeau in the past, they've had like a tent in the parking lot there. They got rid of that, built this permanent structure there, so they actually have a full functioning working kitchen in there now. That is open like about 4 hours before kickoff opens with the parking lot. So that's where they had the tasting actually this year for the event.
And it sounds like you've done a couple of these. You got a couple of these tastings under your belt. Looking back on previous years, is there anything that you'd pay money to have brought back that you really miss?
The one thing that I wish they could have either bring it back or have been able to get it out to the general concession area was they had basically a donut ice cream sandwich, which was they had this machine, and they would take two donuts and they would put one donut on. It was like a panini maker almost, you know, like sort of a sandwich press. So you put one donut on the bottom, scoop ice cream, put another donut on top, and you press it down with this machine. So you end up with like this warm, crusty donut around, crispy donut around this kind of still chilled ice cream in the middle.
Okay, you have to stop.
I know.
Just kidding. Yeah, like, that sounds too good.
If there was one thing, I'm like, if you could figure out how to, but I understand with the timing and to turn that around in the concession line, it won't work. I mean, that's kind of the battle they're always in when they talk about these concessions is, you know, the turn time, because you can't have things people are ordering and it's going to take 2 minutes a person. Well, if you got 10 people in line and it's taking 2 minutes, well, it's 20 minutes gone just standing in line waiting for food. So,
oh, you had me a donut ice cream sandwich for sure.
Same
here. Well, we can maybe try that at home on the like George Foreman grill or panini maker or something.
What are you talking about? We need to open our own donut sandwich ice cream thing franchise.
You know, sometimes the producers have spare time. They could be making those for us all.
I'm sure they're going to love that idea.
Yeah, this is a good one.
Yeah, that's probably the one thing I keep, like of everything I've ever had at these, that's the one that always comes back to me. That I'm like, oh, man, I go for another one of those.
That does sound good. What about this 1919 burger?
That it's kind of interesting because we did kind of some of our favorite burgers around the state. We had some of the different reporters in our group. I asked them all, hey, give me burgers, and we put together a list, and the one I had chose that I wanted on there was actually the 1919 burger, which is a regular menu item, again, at the main menu, at the main restaurant there, and then they saw it on the concession, so it's now going to be available in the concession stands. I really like this. It's got this peppered bacon. They use fried sauerkraut, which actually, and I'm not the hugest sauerkraut fan, but when it's fried, it kind of mutes the flavor a little bit. And it makes it. It just adds a nice little. So the flavors kind of come through, and there's this nice roasted pepper olay on it, and somehow it all comes together rather than like all these toppings overpowering the burger, which can happen a lot. I think people can have fun with burgers, put a lot of toppings on, but then you lose the burger flavor. And somehow they found the right balance. I'll be curious to see, how they trying to do that in the concession setting compared to the restaurant. But that's really a good burger.
We've been talking about items in the concessions and the restaurant and the club seat area. Is there anything interesting that they're walking around with? I can see the guy yelling beer here or brats. I can't see the guy yelling elk stroganoff. Get your elk stroganoff. But anything funky going around apart from the beer and brats and cotton candy?
They
kept it traditional in that one spot, huh?
Yeah.
If somebody is lucky enough to be heading to Lambeau over the next few weeks, what is the one must-try item that you would recommend before we let you go?
Gosh, I guess it depends on who you are, but as long as you're not like a vegetarian or whatever, I would say that 1919 burger is worth trying if you like those kinds of things. Last year they had a jalapeno bratwurst, which I think they might still have that there. That's very good if you like that kind of stuff. Otherwise, I think everybody kind of knows what they like. I think the bacon wrap pretzel with the cheese is probably a safe bet too. If you're going to split that with a couple of friends, I mean, that's probably something a lot of people are going to agree that this is going to taste great.
Do you think the chefs ever feel kind of hemmed in because this is Packers, it's Wisconsin, people want their beer and brats, and the chefs maybe want to make elk stroganoff? Is there a balance there between those?
Definitely. And I think they know too that they'll bring stuff out knowing full well that it might last the season and that's going to be it, and then they're going to have some fun again. I think this is where the beginning of the year like this, the off season is where they get to kind of have some creative fun, see how it goes, and they know, but they know, ultimately it's going to be the burgers, brats, hot dogs, beer, nachos, popcorn, all that stuff.
Yeah, it sounds like nobody's disappointed. Dan, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you for having me on.
That was Dan Higgins, writes about food and drink for USA Today Network Wisconsin. You can find a link to his piece about the best new food at Lambeau Field on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
You're listening to not Fox Sports. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. And right now we're wondering what you love to cook on Packers game day. Is it green and gold? Do you have a recipe that's time-honored tradition in your family that everybody asks for?
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is there something you serve for good luck when you're watching the big game, whether it's Packers or Badgers or other team? And you have something that travels well that you bring over when you're watching a game at a friend's house? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
Let's take our first caller now. We've got Sarah on the line in Green Bay. Sarah, hi.
Hi.
What do you like to cook?
Well, we are avid football fans, college and pro and whatever. And when that fall crispness crispness gets into the air, we always make a big old batch of booyah.
Booyah. Right, and this is one that I've just learned about since beginning this show. Rob, tell us.
It's a stew. It's of Belgian origin. Is that right, Sarah?
It is. It's actually, so it's a labor of love, and it starts with, you know, a homemade bone broth, and you take the chicken off, and it takes a long time to make, but, man, it flies out of the pot, and the leftovers go home with everybody.
So it's labor intensive. Is this something that a beginner can learn to make pretty easily?
Oh, definitely. It's all just about, you know, cutting up separate ingredients and vegetables and adding them to the pot at different times. And, you know, the outcome is just a really rich labor of love chicken stew, basically. And then, you know, we bake up a couple loaves of fresh bread, maybe some oyster crackers. And I even cook up some noodles on the side for anybody that wants to toss them in.
And Sarah, is this something, if it's a noon game, is this something you get up early and make on Sunday, or do you have to do all the work on Saturday?
I would definitely do it the day before, because that soup is even better the next day.
Sarah, thank you so much for starting us off. Appreciate the call. We are asking for your favorite football game day foods. You can pick other games, but I know food and football in particular seem to go well together. What do you like to serve? What do you like to eat? What do you like to bring over for the football party? 800-642-1234 is the number to call.
And let's take another call. We've got Michelle joining us in Green Bay. Michelle, hi.
Hi, yeah. The recipe that my husband always requests to bring over, usually to friends' houses, is a buffalo chicken dip that's just loaded with cream cheese and blue cheese and ranch dressing. And it's really bad for you, so you only make it if it's like a big game, like a playoff.
Oh, okay.
But it is delicious.
So is there actual chicken in it, or do you dip, you know, you bring your chicken wings and you dip the dip in there?
Nope, there is chicken in the dip, and then you gotta dip it with Fritos, like the big Fritos.
All right, that's sounding pretty good, I gotta say.
Oh, yeah, I was picturing like buffalo chicken wings, but this is, so you've got, what did you cook the chicken in the crock pot first, Michelle? So it's, you know, it's part of the dip then?
It's actually just any kind of shredded chicken, a whole lot of Frank's Red Hot sauce. Ooh. And then, like I said, the ranch dressing and the blue cheese and just a lot of cholesterol, basically.
Michelle, thank you so much for sharing that at 800-642-1234. I mean, there are at least two kinds of cheese there. You could have.
I know.
You would have maybe even omit the chicken just to bring out the cheese.
I could omit the chicken, sure. You know, but any kind of dip. So that's my thing for football food. And I'll be upfront. I'm totally a fair weather fan. I will watch if they're in the Super Bowl.
Okay.
Or maybe a playoff if I have other friends around who are invested in that, or family, but probably I'm just going to bring out the dips during the Super Bowl. And it's about the dips. It's not about the football.
Dips is a great Super Bowl party food. Yeah. And I have a friend who does the, you know, football shaped cheese ball, the cheese football. Basically, you dip the crackers and you don't want it too dense because otherwise the crackers just break in the cheese ball.
Well, that's why I was surprised about the booyah because. You know, I'm visualizing people getting up and cheering and the
stew
flying.
Yeah, you're sitting on the couch. Yeah,
right.
Maybe bring out the old couch or put plastic on it.
Right, same with chili, right? That's something people like to
make. That's a good game day food, too, yeah. Huh. But yeah, you've got to be careful. You've got to be dexterous. Join in. We're taking your calls on a favorite food to serve during the Packers game. We'll take Badger game, too, or whatever sporting event you want. What do you like to serve when people come over? What do you like to bring over? And hey, let's throw tailgating into the mix, too. And remember, beverages are an option. 800-642-1234 is the number, 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Our producers went online and found some fun beverages, it looks like. There's one called, are you looking at this, the Green Bay? I didn't see a visual, but it's got a
mix of... Five oranges, parsley.
Okay.
Run them through the juicer, slowly pour parsley juice over the OJ, forming two layers. Probably want to mix them, though, before drinking. Interesting. Well,
unless you want the straight parsley juice.
Yum.
I like fresh orange juice.
Would you drink this?
You know, I like a little bit of parsley, and a little bit of parsley goes a really long way. I mean, I get the visual, but
right.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I'd do this.
I kind of have to agree with that. I do. I don't know, but I bet the visual is fantastic.
Right. Somebody found a recipe for a Packers punch, bourbon triple sec, lemonade, 7-Up, and an apple, I guess, blended into the mix. I'd have to find more about this. I don't know what makes that a Packers punch in particular. If you know, give us a call at 800-642-1234. Looking for your favorite football game day foods at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And the Packers started their season, so what did you make for that very first game? Be curious to know if you have something you've been craving, or are you maybe waiting for the weather to turn a little bit colder and get into some of those cozy football chili apple kinds of things that you can make while you're watching. Let us know. 800-642-1234 is the number to call.
And I made something not to eat during the game, but I had been marinating it during the game. This is for dinner later that I would love to serve now for a Packer game. I've told you about this. A chicken shawarma that I did on the grill. I found this spice combo of like 8 or 10 different spices for the marinade. And actually, we had a guest on a long time ago who was like, if you can get spices in seed form, like cumin or coriander or black pepper, grind it up. So I've got an old coffee grinder. Grind it up in there and then marinate that stuff. I'd actually marinated it for a day, grilled it, and this was fantastic. I think it may have been the best food I've ever made in my life, you know, which isn't saying that much. I'm an okay cook.
It sounds delicious, but it sounds to me, correct me if I'm wrong, It sounds a little fancified for football food.
And then you just cut it
into
strips.
With your fresh herbs and your...
Well, no. That's in the advance work. By the time you put it, by the time you plate it, you've cut it into strips and serve it with pitas that you throw on the grill.
All right. That sounds good.
And just some sauce, that tzatziki sauce I made with cucumber and yogurt. All right. This is more work than I usually do on cooking, but this I would proudly serve for a Packer game.
Where's the processed cheese food?
That's true. You can put that on the side.
Where's the onion dip? Where is the Velveeta? That's what I want to know. It sounds delicious, though.
We are taking your Packer game day food recommendations at 800-642-1234, sharing some of our own as well. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. Or the Ideas Network Facebook page. I don't know if we threw any of those other recipes on there. But you can call in quick now. We're just about out of time at 800-642-1234. I don't know. That's what I would serve next. How about you?
I'm going to go for the dip. So I have a whole bunch of things pinned on Pinterest, like a French onion dip that I've been dying to try. There's also, and this is a little fancy, like you like to be a little fancier. So this is more of a goat cheese dip with cherry tomatoes. So it's seasonal. Let's get in Patty really quickly from Colorado. Patty, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What are you serving up?
What I like to serve up is we take a big turkey deep fryer to the tailgating, and we cook up cases and cases of little frozen chicken wings, and we make several side dishes, like, you know, the buffalo, the ranch, all the different kinds that you can dip your wings in. And then we just let everybody that walks by our tables and chairs just have at it.
Wow.
You're so generous.
You're the chicken wing lady.
Yes, I am. I'm actually from Wisconsin originally and just moved to the mountains of Colorado, so... But I'm still a diehard Packer fan.
That was my next
question. And I still have Packer parties when they play.
That's excellent. I can't believe you bring a whole deep fryer when you tailgate. That's serious.
That's impressive.
It's pretty cool, though. I mean, people are surprised by it, of course, but it's really neat and fast and really limited cleanup. I mean, it's not a big deal, really. It's just a ton of fun.
And I bet you make a lot of friends.
Yep, I do.
Lovely.
Well, Patty, thank you so much. Thank you all for calling in and for posting on the Central Time Facebook page. All out of time for your calls, but you can still share your game day foods and maybe even share a recipe while you're at it. You can do that on the Ideas Network Facebook page, or, of course, you can tweet us at Central Time WPR if you're tweeting a recipe, you know, a little bit at a time. So, Veronica, you were out sick yesterday. You had a bad cold with a sore throat,
right? I had a cold. Luckily, it wasn't a lingering. I mean, I'm still recovering a little bit, but I feel much better than yesterday.
Well, and staying with the food theme, you know, people have their favorite sick foods. You were telling me you had a kind of a weird one yesterday.
Well, you know how sometimes when you're sick and you think about what you want and you can't, nothing sounds good.
Right.
And oftentimes for me in that situation, the one thing that sounds good is chicken noodle soup with a lot of
noodles. That's obvious, yeah.
But yesterday, the one thing that sounded remotely palatable was pimento cheese.
So this is like a cheese spread with pimentos,
right,
in it?
Cheese spread with a pimento, and my lovely family got me both kinds, a regular kind and a goat cheese kind.
And wow. So, and how much of those are left after yesterday?
That's a little personal. I don't feel like I need to be sharing that with you. It was delicious, though. We put it on some chips and baguettes, and yeah, it was not a balanced day, but it tasted really good.
That doesn't sound like sore throat food to me. I don't know.
It wasn't ideal, but it tasted good.
Okay,
what about you? You would probably eat your fancy chicken shawarma in a baked Alaska.
I do soup. I'll do canned soup. I like canned pears for some reason when I have a sore throat. That's the one thing I want, except then I like pour it into a container. I eat half of it. I put the rest in the fridge. 2.5 weeks later, I've forgotten about it. I throw it away because it's going bad.
What about spicy food? I know some people like to get the really spicy food when they're sick.
For congestion sometimes, yeah. Sore throat, I don't want that. But yeah. You can, again, share your favorite sick person food. Tweet us at Central Time WPR. This is the Ideas Network.